Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Today, we visit a small town in Middle Georgia that is home to the Georgia State Banana Pudding Festival, and we talk with a mayor who started out life in the big city, but made his home in this very small town that he's been helping to grow. We're going to go talk with Mayor Roger Bacon in the small town of Irwinton, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by Koch Industries. Just like the great small towns we feature on Small Town Podcast, every great company has a story. From its humble beginnings starting out in Middle America in the 1960s, Koch Industries has become one of the largest privately held companies in the nation and has achieved an international presence in 50 countries around the globe. The companies of Koch Industries create innovations in transportation, medical care, water filtration, building materials, household goods, and so many other products and technologies that impact our lives every day. You can see more of the Koch story, both where they've come from and where they're going, by visiting kochind.com/podcast. All right, I'm now in the city council chamber in the city of Irwinton, Georgia. The city hall where the council chamber is also happens to double as a little bit of a fire department, which I'm sure we'll get into because I thought that was interesting when I pulled up. But I'm joined by the mayor of Irwinton, Mayor Roger Bacon. Mayor Bacon, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, Mayor Seals, it's a pleasure to have you here in our fair city, and I look forward to our discussions here and moving forward.
I actually am glad. Now, we've, of course, met face-to-face at some GMA events. We've coordinated this for a little while. But there's a story I have to tell before we even get an interview. I've actually been mistaken for you, not because we look alike, but because my city of Ocilla is in Irwin County. We're in Wilkinson County now in the city of Irwinton. And it was a couple years ago, I was at an education summit, and there was a very prominent educator, I won't say her name, who was speaking before the crowd and wanted to talk about, I guess, the collaboration between some different counties. And I was sitting in the audience, and she knew exactly who I was. So she said, and tonight we have Mayor Seal from the city of, and she just completely blanked on Ocilla. But she remembered Irwin County, so she said the mayor of Irwinton. and it got a couple chuckles, and I went up to her later. I said, no, there's an Irwinton somewhere else. And I actually didn't know your name at the time because this was before we met. So now, once I met you, I said, now I know who the mayor of Irwinton actually is. It's Roger Bacon. So I won't say her name, but I'm going to send her the selfie I'll take of you and I together so I can say mayor of Osceola, mayor of Irwinton, in the same place.
And I'm sure at that point she'll realize the distinction.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't imagine getting mistaken. You're a really good-looking man, so, and you have a much better head of hair than I do. So anyway, there's the short story about that. But I'll start this interview like I do all my others. Were you born in Irwinton, Georgia?
No, I was not. So I was born April 24th, 1952 at Crawford Long Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, big city guy.
Yep, pretty much.
So where did you grow up after that?
I grew up in Decatur, Georgia, member of the First Baptist Church in Decatur. My mother would like for me to make sure I mentioned that.
Okay, make sure you do.
I had good beginnings. I may have strayed somewhat since then. But yeah, I grew up in Decatur, went to Avondale High School, got out in 1970, and have been venturing ever since.
Well, I'm actually curious about your journey then, because to grow up in Metro Atlanta and end up as the mayor of Irwinton, Georgia, a small town in middle Georgia, I'm sure there's a journey there. So you graduated high school, still living in Decatur?
That's correct.
And what did you do after high school?
After high school, college for a couple of years. Back then, the draft was still around. I got a very low draft number. Decided not to get drafted, decided to go into the Air Force instead.
Okay. All right. And so I went. You enlisted, and instead of them telling you, you told them, okay, I'll come.
I decided to be proactive after that draft number came
up. So. You knew you were getting involved one with the other. So.
Exactly.
Did you say what branch of service?
I was in the Air Force.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And what'd you do in the Air Force?
I was in a reconnaissance squadron. Back then, we had drones that were launched off the wings of C-130s. Mm-hmm. We had U-2s and we had SR-71s.
Okay.
So I was involved in the supply effort for those. And after that, got out of the service, went back to college. At night, during the day, I was working at a cabinet shop. After a year or so, the cabinet work was a lot more interesting, and so I decided to stay with that.
So you had college during the day, cabinet making at night.
No, college at night and cabinet making during the day.
Okay, I got them backwards. Yeah. And you decided you wanted to do just the cabinet making.
Right. Yeah.
So you got into that.
I kind of kid around that the cabinet making was a lot more difficult than college, and so I welcomed the challenge.
Okay.
And had some good instructors along way as well.
Well, that's good. So you ended up making a career out of that?
Yep. Went into...
And this was still up in the Atlanta area?
Yes.
Okay.
Spent 7 or 8 years working with a cabinet company. During that time, I finally learned how to read a tape measure. And at the point I learned to read a tape measure and operate machinery safely, I decided to go out on my own. And so that's what I did in 1984. And then in 1988... I was looking to scale down, and so I moved my shop. I had a building come available in Toombsboro, Georgia, which is a great little small city in itself.
Now that's in Wilkinson County also. How far is that from here?
Toombsboro is about 6 miles east of here. It's
just
very
down the
close.
Road. Yeah. Now, what brought you – you were born in Atlanta, grew up in a metro Atlanta area, the city of Decatur, and went to high school there. Went off to college, went off the Air Force, came back still in Metro Atlanta. So what was the connection that brought you into Toombsboro and ultimately into Irwinton?
That's right. I guess it was Irwinton and then ultimately to Toombsboro.
Oh, okay.
But regardless. No, my father's family is from Irwinton.
Oh, okay.
Daddy was number 3 of 10 children. He was the first one born here in Irwinton. The old family place is still there, still in good repair. My grandfather moved up here from White Springs, Florida in 1920 and settled in. And he was a bank auditor at the time. At some point, opened up an insurance agency. He was also a farmer. He was also the mayor of Irwinton at one time.
So this is a family tradition for you.
Somewhat, yeah. So it's the family that brought me back here. And as I was mentioning to you earlier, Daddy made sure that once a month, when my sister and I were growing up, we were going to come to Irwinton. So it was
family roots. Even though you grew up in the big city, you were already familiar with...
Yeah, and it didn't take long to get hooked, you know, on these... Daddy used to refer to Irwinton as the center of the universe, and he wasn't that far off.
Yeah.
But so that's kind of the background.
So you moved, now make sure I got the year right. What year did you move your shop down here to Toombsboro first?
Yeah, in 1988.
Okay. All right. So then you made the move fully. No more big city.
Well, for about 4 or 5 years after that, most of my work was in Atlanta. So at some point I started, you know, picking up, you know, a little more work down here.
It was a slow gradual shift, but the shop was down here.
Word of the mouth always works. It just moves a little faster in Atlanta than maybe it did down here. But, you know, starting in about 19, 95 for probably at least the next 10 or 12 years. Stayed busy enough.
Well, what got you, because obviously at some point you got involved in local government. You moved here, but already had family roots. You were already familiar with the area and had those family connections. I'm sure knew several people from all those trips you just mentioned coming down as a child growing up. So what got you involved in local government? How did that come about?
Well, my wife is a lot more civically involved than I was. So having met her in 2007, and she would come home from different city council meetings or county commissioners meeting. She was actually the editor of the Wilson County Post for a number of years.
Okay.
So she had a voice. I was just kind of behind the scenes. I'm the cabinet guy. I like my dogs, you know. I pitch in to help, you know, wherever I can. But what got me interested in was the election in 2015, where the former mayor decided not to run for re-election, and only one other person had qualified for the mayor's race. Well, there were several very important issues that I felt might not get the attention that they needed and deserved. So I threw my hat in the ring, ran on those issues and some others, and got elected.
So no previous city council experience?
Zero.
2015, ran for mayor?
Zero.
So I'm curious, if you just describe yourself as behind the scenes, you'd be glad to help, but not going to kind of lead the charge. What were those issues that kind of led you to be motivated enough to run for office and put yourself in that position?
Primarily the water system. The Irwinton, it's got a good system, but it's old. Mm-hmm. And at the time, there were two construction projects that were not let yet, but the funding was there.
Right.
And so I wanted to make sure that those projects went forward. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, it worked out that way that they did. The projects, by most measures were very successful. Upgraded the system to the degree that now we have radio red meters. There's about 650 water customers, and they all have radio red meters. The reading part now takes one guy 2.5 hours,
right,
whereas before it took three people almost a week. So,
yeah.
And then we had some infrastructure improvements. Now, the other thing was upgrading City Hall. City Hall had not been upgraded, and so what you see here now is so much different than what it was several years ago.
Well, since you brought that up, I kind of teased a little bit when I introduced you. We're sitting in City Hall, but as I drove up, looking for City Hall on the left side of the road as I was coming across, I assumed this was the fire station because on each side of the main building here, there's a bay with a fire truck in it.
Well, there's a somewhat interesting story about that. This particular building was built in 1976, I believe. It housed a jail also at the time. The part we're in now is an addition.
Okay.
The fire bays were an addition at one point. So
this is not a large building now. So I don't know if you know the square footage that they built in the original building in the 70s, but it was just the jail and that was it?
Well, and there was an office, city clerk's office, and there was a water department office as well. But I believe it was a two-cell jail.
There must be a back hallway somewhere I didn't see when I came in, because that sounds like a lot for the size of this building.
Well, I mean, these cells were, not big.
Right.
And they were just holding tanks, basically.
Yeah.
Is what it was.
It wasn't the prison. It was just the holding cell for the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Gave people a little place to stay and, perhaps sober up.
The most common reason in a small town, you put someone in the jail cell.
Weren't housing dangerous people.
Right. Just people got a little out of hand.
That's right. And got caught.
So how did this become, because it just seems odd that you just, is this the fire department, the fire station, or just happens to house those two trucks?
Well,
those bays on the side?
Yeah, Irwinton's had a volunteer fire department for I don't know how many years, since whenever.
So there's not a station where a fireman sleeps overnight or anything?
No. And right now, because of the efforts of Mayor Robert Davidson over in Allentown, we have a full-time position that is being funded by a grant.
Oh.
And we're going into the third year of that 3-year grant. There's also two other positions, one in Allentown and one in Toombsboro. Mm-hmm. So the way we staff ours is we've got, it's one position, but we have three people that work, okay, you know, varying hours, right, you know, for that. And to give them a lot of credit, they got on board, they got real well organized training, they respond. I mean, Irwinton's got a really remarkable response rate. So I can't say enough about the efforts of the volunteer firemen here. But as far as the equipment and all of that, that was purchased years ago,
right,
and,
right,
and had been maintained. And that's where they sit until, you know, we get calls.
Right. So. Okay. Well, like I said, when I passed it and then realized that was City Hall. And when I came in, I went and spoke to you. I said, well, the fire trucks kind of threw me off, but that's one of those creative things you have to do in a small town to accommodate everything. Because, you know, building a whole separate building just for those and an office for the fire department, that's one person, well, one position that rotates around. That would cost more than just having the base here, and it still is effective.
And there's some plans in the works now for a fire department building, okay, for our equipment and personnel and all that. Basically, it's going to take some coordination efforts with the county. It's going to take, you know, a lot of grant money. We're working on trying to make that happen. We'll see how it proceeds.
Yeah. So what other, you mentioned issues, plural, that you wanted to make sure got some attention. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of them. Were there some other things that you really wanted to kind of, that motivated you to run for mayor to make sure they were taken care of?
Yeah, the sidewalks were the first thing. You know, we got some grant money for sidewalks, a replacement. I'm lagging behind on the streets a little bit. I've got the approval for what we need to be doing. It's just a matter of getting the work done.
Right.
We've got the money there. It's just, a, you know, kind of dragging my
the
feet a little bit on that.
The process of doing that,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
But over the course of the next 6 months, those projects will be complete. It'll involve striping within the city limits. It'll involve new street signs. It'll involve a couple of crosswalks. Actually working with the DOT to remove the traffic lights.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Usually a small town say, hey, let's get an extra traffic light. You're getting one taken away?
Well, I presented them with the idea a couple of years ago, and they set the team in motion and started doing all the studies. And they came back about 2 months ago and says, well, we can do that, and here's why we can do it. And so I mentioned a couple other projects that along this Highway 57 corridor because, you know, there's a lot of truck traffic going, and I'm just looking at ways of slowing it down so that it's a little safer. And that was one way of doing it.
Well, now how, okay, so you're letting them pass through, but what was the reason for taking away? You just had a side street that it wasn't quite as necessary to stop the main flow of traffic?
The idea that it will slow the traffic down at that intersection is good, all right? The downside is that the majority of the traffic is on 57.
Right.
And so the DOT, you know, they caution that when they run this by Atlanta, the main DOT office, that's what they're going to be taking a look at. From my understanding, though, that, you know, if we decide to go forward, we'll have their blessings. There's also, we're going to redo the intersection here at the old Union Church.
Uh-huh. And I saw that as I came in, that historic church, yeah.
Right. So we're going to do that along with this stop sign project. So it's a part of a bigger plan.
I just say it's funny because in my intro for the podcast, you've heard, I say, well, Osceola, we got two traffic lights and we're not looking to get a third anytime soon. And Irwinton now has me beat. You know, how many traffic lights do you have?
Yeah, we have, well, there's four. There's one intersection, but there's four traffic lights.
All over. Yeah. So you could say, well, we got four traffic lights and we're going to take one away.
Yeah, and give it to the city of Osceola.
No, we don't need that third. Oh, that's hilarious. So that was 2015. You ran for mayor on those issues, and it sounds like you've made some progress and probably still got some more things. So conveniently, it's now 4 years later. We're recording this in September of 2019, so that must mean you're up for re-election this year.
Well, that's another story.
Well, what's the story there? I was just going to ask you. Qualifying week's already over, so you've already made a decision one way or the other.
Well, about a year ago, the wife and I made a decision, you know, that we wanted to travel somewhat.
Okay.
And so over the course of the last year, we've sort of been, you know, working toward that.
Uh-huh.
But it's like any other battle plan. You start implementing, and you better be ready for things to change, you know. So come qualifying, even though I was not going to run, depending on who else qualified, okay,
right,
nobody qualified. So
you had to.
Well, I didn't necessarily have to.
I know, but you felt compelled to make sure that there was actually something going.
I was thinking, you know, in the best interest of, well, and actually the wife and I had this discussion as well, but in the best interest of Irwinton, we might just need to, you know, stay put. And so anyway, so I qualified.
So you did qualify and no one else qualified, so you're unopposed.
Well, not quite.
Oh, there's more of a twist in the story.
One of the candidates that qualified for a city council position decided to withdraw his qualification from
for
city
council,
and he's now a write-in candidate for mayor. So it'll be some, you know, an interesting time. There's no real hard feelings or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's part of the process.
An interesting political drama unfolds in the small town of Irwinton, Georgia.
Yeah. And like me, and I'm, you know, to be quite honest, this person has, you know, had no previous experience, mm-hmm. but neither did I.
Right.
You know.
So it was not a council member running for re-election. This is a person who was going to run for a council seat and has instead decided to run for the mayor.
That's correct.
Mayor's office.
Yeah,
okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that goes.
Yep, we will.
We'll have to check in with you. We'll have to do some kind of update episode next year.
After. Well, you've got my phone number. I'll be glad to let you know how it goes.
Yeah. Well, if you do continue to serve, what are some of the things you want to see? I mean, you've named some of the projects. That's what you got involved in politics to get done in the first place. Mm. I'm sure some other things have kind of emerged over the 4 years of your term that you, oh, well, I didn't realize this is something we could do, or that this is kind of an issue. Or once you get in office, I'm sure you hear a lot more from the constituents of the town to say, hey, this is an issue, and maybe it wasn't something you were as aware of before. So what are some of those things that you would want to affect change on going forward?
The first thing is probably if we're going to start trying to take some baby steps toward getting a little more economic development in Irwinton.
Every small town and probably big city would say we need to work on economic development.
Right, yeah. And that's probably one of the areas that I lag behind, you know, in the first couple of years. We've got some vacant buildings that we're trying to, you know, attract people to. Small businesses, you know, just businesses that can come in, occupy office space, and have a presence, you know, here in Irwinton. Events, we're going to start planning a lot more events for Irwinton. We now have, and I mentioned this earlier, we now have a Main Street program. So,
yeah.
So that's going to play a big part in the city's future, you know, as far as bringing people in the community to the events, but also bringing outsiders into the events. So that, you know, they can come to Irwinton and have a good time, hopefully, and try to get a presence outside the city. So that's one thing we'll be working on. Irwinton's hosted the State Banana Pudding Festival for the last...
I did not know there was a State Banana Pudding Festival.
Yeah, well, now you do.
I do, and I know where it's at.
Yeah, absolutely.
What month is that?
It's in April,
okay.
Usually around the first... couple weeks in April.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, the very first year it was held, the winner here in the state, if you win at the state, you get invited to the Nationals.
The National Banana Pudding Festival.
And that...
of course.
Well, it wasn't the first year. It was the second year, actually. The winner here went on to win the Nationals.
Oh.
And then the next year as well, the winner here won the Nationals in Centerville, Tennessee.
So for 2 years in a row, Georgia... was the home of the national winner of the Banana Pudding Festival, I guess, cooking contest.
That's right. It's judged. They usually have about 10 contestants somewhere in that neighborhood.
Wow.
And then they have five or six judges, and the judges get to sample everything.
Do the judges get paid to come in and enjoy some of the best banana pudding ever?
They get paid because they are enjoying the banana pudding is the payment.
I was going to say, yeah. You don't give them a separate check for that. They get to come enjoy banana pudding.
Yeah, they get invited. I don't think anybody's refused that offer yet.
They ask, hey, can I please be a judge for that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you probably got people standing in line.
There's a waiting list for judging.
But it's fun for a day.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then, like I mentioned, the events. We had our first food truck event a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, man.
And that turned out real good. It was like from... estimates that I've heard, there was like 1,000 people that came to
it.
And I mean, all the food trucks sold out. I mean, they came loaded, but they
left empty.
Well, except for their cash registers.
Well, that's good.
And that's good. I mean, that's what you want. You know,
well, that's exciting.
Yeah. So it's that sort of thing I'm going to be working toward a little bit more.
Well, wish you best of luck in the campaign.
Thank you.
And we'll see what happens. Yes, It'll be interesting. I'm sure I'll call you next day and say how'd it go.
Yeah. Well, it's all about getting the votes.
You know, yeah. Well, and, you know, since you were actually considering not running, if the city of Irwinton decides to go a different direction, that means you can travel more.
Well, it does, and I'll be glad to lend a hand wherever I can.
Sure, sure. You know, well, so. And that's the difference, you know, and that's come through, and I've got to see this firsthand by doing these interviews directly, but I'm sure the listeners are starting to get the impression, oh, these guys ended up running for mayor or council in a small town. That's a little different breed than politicians in general, that kind of, you know, the image that people have in their heads. It really is, because I wanted to see this happen. I wanted to make sure our water systems got upgraded properly and streets got the proper attention. Mm. And the idea of a political agenda just doesn't exist in the same way in a small town like this. It's just more about community service. And I say that because you just echoed that very humbly. But you're not the only one. Everyone's just kind of, well, I want to improve my community, and if the way to do that is I got to run for this office and put up with a little bit of headache, mm-hmm. then okay.
And along those lines, I'll have to say that the support that I've gotten by being involved with our Middle Georgia Regional Commission, it couldn't be done without them.
Shout out to Laura Mathis.
There you go.
She's a listener too. Hey, Laura.
Laura has and her staff up there could not have been more helpful, you know, to me. Because, like I said, I had zero experience. I could not have told you who the regional commission was prior to this. All right, but then also, you know, you're very involved with the Georgia Municipal Association. Mm-hmm. Great resource there.
Oh yeah,
the people whose job it is to help municipalities you can't put a value on that. You have to take advantage of it, but they're there.
It's amazing. And I've told people this about the GMA staff. I'm in the Southern Georgia Regional mm-hmm. Commission area. I'm on their executive committee. And so at the regional commission level, certainly for Southern Georgia, I'm sure you'd say the same about Middle Georgia. For Georgia Municipal Association, ACCG, the Association of County Commissioners, Georgia on the county government side, the staffers of those organizations know infinitely more about how to run a local government and what can be done and the resources available at the state and regional level than any of us as elected officials could ever hope to. And so anybody that, you know, catches on to that quickly generally does a little better for their community, not because we're somehow all of a sudden know everything the day we're sworn in, but because those folks just really know that business.
There's some amazingly smart, young people involved. And then if you take that a step further and you look at the staffing that Georgia House of Representatives have, mm-hmm. our senators, and you take a look at, you know, all the smart people involved with that, it just gives you a different perspective.
Right.
You know, I'm somewhat of a cynical person, and maybe sarcastic would be better, but I have some cynicism as well. But a lot of that has really weakened over the last few years by my association with these other people. And it's encouraging.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's very encouraging to, you know, and that's sort of a behind the scenes, you know, as mayor and Osceola, you know, you've got a lot of behind the scenes you're involved with that, you know, that some people may or may not know about. Okay.
Right.
But it's those behind the scenes that still get things done.
Yeah.
And you rely on a lot of smart people, you know, to help you.
So. Yeah, we just surround ourselves with good people, and they make us look good. We get credit for things we don't deserve, and we just try to shift it to them as much as possible.
Yeah,
but
right.
I want to talk more about Irwinton specifically, and we've talked so much about it. But before I do that, I've got a segment of get-to-know-you questions I've done, and I've had so much fun doing this, so I can't wait to hear yours. You've listened to a couple episodes, so you might be more prepared. I got to change up my questions. Maybe for season 3, there'll be different questions, because now everyone's starting to kind of know them. But for people who don't know you, we'll get to know you a little bit through these questions. For people that think they know you, maybe they'll learn something new. So, Roger Bacon, first question, do you have or have you ever had a nickname?
Yes. Rogie.
Rogie.
Yep, my cousins call me Rogie.
Okay, kind of because it Roger?
Roger and Rogie, yeah.
But is there something that you did that you kind of went rogue and that's like you're making a face like there's a story there, but you might not want to tell it.
Probably when I was much younger, there might have been some black sheep tendencies there. Not anything serious or no felonious, and no ill intentions, but I could tend to be a little mischievous at a younger age.
So you were a little bit of a rogue, and it happened to be a name kind of like Roger, so that's...
That was it.
Rogie.
Yeah.
So if you hear someone at a GMA event from across the hall yell, "Rogie," that's me trying to get your attention.
I will probably turn my head when high in the world.
Who knows that? Well, actually, it might not be me. You know, once this episode gets out there, everyone will know, Rogie.
Well, that's right.
Rogie
well,
Bacon.
We'll see.
If you had to sing a karaoke song to defend the honor of your fair town of Irwinton, what would be your go-to karaoke song?
That would probably be Kris Kristofferson's Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Okay. Like you were a little bit prepared for that.
It's a great song. Kris Kristofferson's a great song, right?
You had to narrow it down.
But I also like Glenn Campbell's Gentle on My Mind. Yeah, that's a good shower song there.
Okay. Shower songs, karaoke songs.
And that's
kind
the extent of my
kind of
karaoke exposure.
All right, that's fine. Know. So we'll line up those two songs next time we see you at a karaoke bar. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Well, I hope my wife doesn't take offense at this, but my mother could cook a meatloaf, mashed potatoes, Lesueur peas, and
you even
and
have
lima
the brand
beans.
Of peas, Lesueur.
That would probably be it.
Now, why would your wife take offense to that? Have you asked her to prepare that meal and then?
Well, no, but my wife is an excellent cook as well.
Okay.
And she makes a very good pot roast.
All right, so good makeup line there.
Right, so between the two,
you saved yourself there with your wife.
The pot roast has replaced the meatloaf and mashed potatoes.
All right,
meal,
so. Good save, Roger.
Thank you.
A rogie. Mm. And final question: if you could attend any concert of any singer, band, any kind of performer, whether they are dead or alive, what concert or performance would you want to attend?
I would love for the group, the Traveling Wilburys, to get back. Well, I mean, all of them are just about, I think.
Well, Roy Orbison was part of that, and I know he's passed on. So,
yeah, and Tom Petty.
Tom Petty, that's right.
I think
Petty
Bob Dylan and the guy from ELO are still alive.
I'm forgetting all the names, but they only made one album, the Traveling Wilburys Volume 1.
Yeah, and it was one of the best musical recordings. You know, that was back in the... Oh, my goodness, back in the early 90s, I believe.
I was going to say,
somewhere in that ballpark.
I was still an adolescent when and my mom liked that, and I remember listening to it.
Well, so. I mean, I wore that one out. So, yeah,
if
that were
Wilburys,
possible, that would be it.
The Traveling Wilburys in concert.
Yep, that would be that
be
would
good
be
show.
Great.
That would be a good show. This episode of Small Town Podcast is sponsored in part by Advanced Disposal. You often hear on these episodes about the challenges for small towns in providing services to its citizens. When you see an Advanced Disposal truck, you may think you just see trash, but what you're really witnessing is service in motion. With changing regulations and expenses, cities that once provided regular trash service are looking to professional organizations to handle this service. And many of those cities, including the small town of Irwinton, Georgia, trust Advanced Disposal to provide that service. Advanced Disposal handles regular pickup and proper disposal of solid waste for Irwinton, Georgia, and countless other cities, large and small, as well as businesses of various sizes all over the state of Georgia, throughout the southeastern United States, and beyond. Advanced Disposal does not view small towns simply as customers, but as partners. Advanced Disposal sponsors Small Town Podcasts because they care about promoting small towns just like Irwinton everywhere. Advanced Disposal is driven to deliver. To find out more about how Advanced Disposal can partner with you in your city or business, visit www.advanceddisposal.com. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm. So I want to talk more about Irwinton, and I guess I should ask this question because we hadn't talked about it yet. What is the population of Irwinton, roughly?
The exact number from the 2010 census was 583.
Okay, we're talking real small town.
Pretty small.
Well, now, because you said there were about 600 meters on your water systems. That mean you're supplying people outside the city?
That's correct.
Okay.
There's about 220 services inside the city.
Okay.
And so then the
you're servicing more outside than inside.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. The water system's got over 20 miles of main
water
lines.
Wow. Well, and does any of that stretch into cities that are nearby, or is all that unincorporated?
No, it's just in unincorporated areas. Probably within a 2 mile radius of the center of Irwinton.
I should have asked this before. I picked up every once in a while. You don't seem to have, I'm sure you'd always like to have more money and resources, but there are several things you said, well, we got this project, we got to do this. And when the money's there, we're okay financially. And a lot of small towns can't say that. There's a lot of people struggling. But I bet that service part right there is giving you regular revenue that helps you do some of the other things you want to do.
Yeah, just briefly, when I took over as mayor, I started paying attention to the financial aspect of the water department. Mm-hmm. And even though it was reasonably good,
sure,
there was no money left over at the end of the month. So I took some time and did some calculations, came up with some modest increases so that we now have money in the bank. We have money for, you know, project improvements. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing. So, you know, I feel comfortable with the water.
Yeah.
We have some problems with billing issues. You know, there's always those kind of issues where a bill got lost or somebody, you know, didn't discover a leak until too late. They get a $500 water
right,
bill.
Right, right.
But through the efforts, you know, of the water clerks and all, we've implemented some changes that have resulted in we've got almost a 90% collection rate now. So, you know, the water department, I think that within the county, the other municipal water providers are doing a good job throughout the county.
Mm-hmm.
And Irwinton is certainly no different there. We're on top of most things.
That's one of those things that people...
There's always room for improvement.
Oh, sure, sure. You know, folks say, oh, you should run government more like a business. Well, there's certain aspects that you just can't. Someone calls 911, you get their credit card number before you'll respond to the call. You know, you can't do that with certain aspects, but certainly... When you're providing a regular service and there's a bill, running it like a business is not only possible but fairly essential. And people who don't sometimes end up in some trouble. So I asked you that. We got off track a little bit there because you were – so the population is under 600.
That's correct.
So it's a real small town. You came here because it was a family connection. But just speak to what is it that makes Irwinton so unique and why it is a place that people should want to come to. And maybe if you got a little background history on Irwinton, some happenings here over the years.
I think, and this is probably true of towns that are similar to Irwinton, but you have families that have been here for generations. I'm not talking two generations. I'm talking three and four.
Right, because now you said your grandfather came up here from Florida, and that's how your family got established here.
That's right.
But you're talking about ones that go back, you know.
I mean, the Bacons in 1920 were kind of the late arrivers, you know. There are a lot of families out in the rural areas that have been here for, like I said, generations. Irwinton, the county that we know now as Wilson County was formed in 1804. Mm-hmm. Right? It was part of a much larger land area at the time that encompassed parts of Lawrence County, Baldwin County, part, I think, of Washington County. I mean, it was huge. As the lands were ceded by the Creek Indians and things started working, you know, toward more settlements and things like that, Wilson County was formed in 1804. Well, Irwinton's been around since 1811. I believe they were chartered as of 1816. So, you know, we've got 200-plus years.
Yeah.
The railroad didn't run through here. Now, that could be good. You know, but if you take a look at McIntyre and Toomsboro, they have railroads run through, and Gordon, of course, as well. So we were kind of spared that. Sherman, on the other hand, had his own issues, but he did spare the old Union Church there. It was built in 1854 and served, back then it served the Methodist, Presbyterians, and Baptist on a kind of a alternating basis there.
And on you said the Union Church,
mm-hmm.
And I saw a sign, a historic Union Church.
That's
is that
right.
Something that people can take a tour of? Or is that a church that still meets?
Yeah, there's a note on the door that says, come next door to get the key, and you're welcome to come in. And,
but as far as any, town, you can have a sign like that on the church.
Yeah, we haven't had any trouble. There's a really great volunteer effort, the Friends of the Union Church.
Okay.
And they've been responsible for, you know, upgrades and those sorts of things.
Because you could tell it was historic, but it looked like it was in a reasonably good condition when I passed it.
It's been a few additions here and there. Amazingly, the structure is still in real good shape.
They built them to last then.
Well, you get 2 foot thick walls of brick.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the history behind that. There were quite a few schools that popped up in the early years around Wilson County and Irwinton. And then, of course, churches were a big thing. I mean, you know, you start moving into a community, you start having churches and graveyards. And I think within the county, there's oh my goodness, I should know this, but there's like well over 40, you know, established cemeteries throughout the county. Wow. You know, that's an attraction if you have
right,
that sort
yeah.
of historical interest.
Because you're not talking about recently established cemeteries. These are goes back a ways.
Yeah, and the city actually maintains the Irwinton Cemetery, and there's some graves there from back during the Civil War. So that's a kind of a unique thing. And then, like I said, there's some families that have been around a long time that are very unique and lend to kind of the atmosphere. Just as an aside, when I was growing up, Daddy can hang around anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he can hang around bank presidents and the House of Representative folks, but he could hang around with some good old card playing country folks too. And there were a lot of those back then.
You know.
It's probably mellowed out a little bit since then. But still, I mean, it's that small town interest that makes it an interesting place. And just one other, there's a lot of people in Georgia, well, I'll say Atlanta, that don't realize there's a whole nother state out there. Atlanta tends to be the focus. It's the state capital.
Sure.
And, you know, probably nearly half the state's population lives there. But all you got to do is venture 40 or 50 miles in any direction outside Atlanta, and you're in rural Georgia for the most part.
I've had more than one person kind of respond to me this way, but I just remember vividly trying to describe where I lived. Someone said, you know, where do you live? Oh, I live in a little town called Ocilla, Georgia. I said, it's just way down south Georgia. And, of course, we're much further south than you guys up here in Irwinton. Y'all are pretty close to Macon.
We are middle Georgia.
That's right. Y'all are middle Georgia.
Man, so we're proud of that, too. As a matter of fact, I have to correct people about that whole north and south Georgia. There is an entire region of the state that's the middle Georgia.
Well, this conversation will actually play into that, because what the person said to me back when I said I've lived in, you know, way down in south Georgia, they said, oh, you mean like near Macon?
That's what I'm talking about.
So Macon is about an hour, depending on where you're starting from, south of Atlanta.
90 miles.
And Ocilla takes about 3 hours to get to from Atlanta, so yeah.
And then if you venture on further down to Thomasville and Valdosta,
there's plenty farther south than Ocilla. That's right. So it's just interesting, the perspective there. See, right? I want to ask you this. You have, in this conversation, referenced several of the small towns that are in Wilkinson County along with you. You've talked about Allentown and some collaborative efforts with them and with Toombsboro. You mentioned several other towns. How many incorporated cities are there in Wilkinson County?
7.
Okay. I'm not going to ask you to name them all.
Well, I can do that.
I know you. And you've already referenced, especially you were talking earlier about the fire department. You've collaborated. You said it was the mayor of Allentown that wrote the grant, and then Allentown, along with you and Toombsboro, got to the benefit of that, of having a position taken care of for 3 years. So just speak to, I'm sure there's some other collaborative efforts going on, and then speak to, I guess, kind of the necessity. You know, we're suffering some issues and dealing with some challenges in small towns and in rural parts of the state. And you could say this about any state in the country, I'm sure. Just speak to the necessity now about working together in these small towns where sometimes there's a little bit of territorialism.
I'll give you a positive example first. I went before our county commissioners the other day about trash pickup for Irwinton water customers that are in the unincorporated areas, all right? What we want to do is provide that service to these people that are in the county, within our water system.
You're already providing the water service, so you want to provide an additional service.
Right, and we provide trash service now to the citizens within our city limits.
Yep.
And the county was receptive to that. So we'll be working with them to implement a plan that will enable the people that want to, and it's not going to be a mandatory thing, we'll be implementing a plan through service delivery strategies, memorandum of understanding, and that sort of thing to provide that. Generally speaking, the county has been cooperative with us whenever, like in road projects where they've got the equipment and the personnel to help. They've been, you know, helpful with that. There are probably some other issues that have been discussed in the past, mostly concerning economic development and things like that, just require a bigger effort and require a real concentration of cooperation. So there's certain things there that just take more time. I think this, and you're aware of this, where the ACCG and the GMA are starting to work together to help bridge, you know, that gap. So, you know, that's one of those things where you just have to work on the simple things and cooperate on that. One of the challenges that the city of Irwinton has had is just within the city clerk area, finding a long-term person who can stand the rigors of being a small-town city clerk. I mean, it's very challenging, and that's one of the things that I will have to say I was unprepared for is when my city clerk and water clerk decided they wanted to, you know, take jobs. Well, you know, they were young, they had families, having to look after their efforts, but it didn't take me long to figure out after I got in office that the most important job in the city, bar none, is a city clerk.
It's not the mayor.
Believe me, it's not the mayor. I'll be the first one to take second. I'll sit on the bench to any good city clerk.
Oh, I think any mayor would.
If they're smart. So without getting into too many of the details. But we've got that situation pretty well under control now. It takes time. I mean, it took over a year and a half.
Yeah. That's something that's actually recently come up in some meetings I've been involved in with GMA and with Wiregrass Technical College. It's our technical college down in Osceola, Irwin County. The workforce development is a hot button issue because if you don't have the workforce, it's going to be hard to attract businesses to come in. That goes back to that economic development issue. You said, well, that's always something we need to work more and more on. That's a bigger challenge. You know, people want jobs, want to grow our economy. That, you know, has all the effects that, of course, that has. But workforce development specific to, you know, municipal and local government, that's becoming a bigger and bigger issue. Getting people qualified is getting harder to fill jobs in a police force. Mm-hmm. You know, being in law enforcement, not quite as glamorous now as it once was. There's more demands on it. Same thing in public works, same thing in administration at a city hall, whether that's a clerk or finance officer, or in my case, my city clerk is our chief financial officer. So if I lose her, essentially I'm losing two positions in one and going and find someone that can just pick up and keep going. It's just not that easy, especially when your town's less than 600. I know there's some towns around. What's the total population of Wilkinson County, roughly?
It's a little less than 10,000.
Yeah, so seven towns, and you're the county seat. So yeah, you got small towns all around.
In Irwinton, our annual general fund budget, we operate on about a $340,000 budget.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, $44,000 of that comes from property taxes. The rest of it's local option, franchise fees, you know, all the other insurance premium rebates, those sort of things.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, you know, what it would take to try to get personnel who could be a city manager and city clerk. But it's a challenge to do that because of the revenue. To get that much money, we pay pretty good for our city clerk position.
Right.
But, you know, when you start talking about degrees and experience and things like that, it's difficult to attract. So.
And it's sometimes more glamorous, or sometimes the benefits can be more attractive in a kind of a corporate position somewhere else.
That's exactly.
And you want qualified people, they're going to be kind of lured away sometimes by other businesses.
It's like you had mentioned earlier, small towns, you got to be a little creative.
That's right. And that's why you have put the fire truck bays on the side of City Hall.
That's right. Well, and that's what I tell people. That's why I make the big bucks.
That's right. I already know that's a lie. Well, Mayor, as we start to close out, I just want to give you the opportunity. I give all my guests, go ahead and speak directly to the audience, and you tell them why they should come visit, or maybe they should just come move to Irwinton, Georgia.
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Matt, for coming
and
conducting the interview. It's very good. And I guess what I would say is that for the same reason that you came to Irwinton, because you were interested, then that might be a good reason for other newcomers as well. What I can say is that you'll be met with a good positive attitude here at City Hall. You'll be moving into an area that's quiet. You would be moving into an area where the welcome wagon is out. There are some challenges, of course, moving into a new area that you'll have to face. We've got some growing pains that right now we're trying to correct. But I wouldn't want to let that discourage anybody who's thinking about moving into Irwinton. I wouldn't want to let that discourage them from doing that. Irwinton is located 30 minutes from Macon, 30 minutes from Dublin, 30 minutes from Milledgeville.
Is that why your dad said it was the center of the universe?
Well, he was expanding a little bit. But yeah, pretty much. So we're conveniently located. We're probably a well-kept secret, you know, as far as that goes, too. But over the last year, there have been a couple, two or three new people that have moved into Irwinton, and we, you know, we always welcome them. So if you're looking to move into an area where there's a downtown restaurants and bar scene and taverns and, you know, downtown businesses, well, we're not quite there yet. But but those are issues that, with the right people moving in, we'll make an effort to, you know, try to accommodate that in the future at some point. So, but transportation, our roads are good around the county. Plenty to do around the county if you enjoy a rural setting. So that's pretty much what we have to offer.
All right. Well, Mayor Bacon, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Mayor Seals, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Roger Bacon for talking with me. After interview, Mayor Bacon took me down to May Bob's Diner, where I had a delicious lunch, and as you might imagine, they served some fantastic banana pudding. Thanks to Advanced Disposal for sponsoring this episode. And as always, we thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Southern Mercantile, and Koch Industries for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production that tells the stories of America's great small towns. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there and sometimes exploring issues that affect small towns everywhere. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonant Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can hang out with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the towns we visit by stopping by our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We love to show you all the small towners out there, some great images from the small towns we visit, and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in and the places you hear about on our podcast. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you real soon.
We stand adjourned.